We are live and welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, the very first Italian-American podcast and the home of your Italian-American moment. I am your very proud host, Frankie D, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, your podcast app. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and connect with us on LinkedIn, and check out our new YouTube page channel with all our moments. My guest today is Agata De Santis, who is an award-winning producer, filmmaker, and writer. She is the founding president of Redhead Productions and the founding editor-in-chief of the online magazine ItaloCanadese.com. She did a 2010 documentary film, Malocchio, which looks at the evil eye and superstition. And her latest film back in 2018 was Terra Mia. And Agata is the author of Malocchio.
I love that you have little post-its in the
book. I didn't want to forget things. Everything you ever wanted to know about the evil eye. Oh, for sure. For sure. And before we get into all that, and you are just a very, very busy lady up there in Canada. So you're in Montreal, Canada, correct? And where's the family from in Italy?
So both my parents are from a little town called Castel Grande in the province of Potenza in Basilicata.
Okay. And I'm totally assuming that you've been to Italy numerous times.
Italy four times. Yeah.
Okay.
It's been a while though, but yeah, four times.
Well, it's been a while for me too, unfortunately. Yeah. Life catch up with you, but, okay. So you did a documentary in 2010 about Malocchio. First, why? Where did this come from?
It was something I just finished university, and it was, I don't know how it piqued my interest, but I wanted to learn more about this Malocchio that I would hear bits and pieces about, but you know, it's never something that's spoken about openly. So I just started doing some research, and there are not many books written about the subject. They tend to be very anthropological, very academic, but I read them all and I realized right away, and this was, you know, we're talking late 90s. I realized, you know, there's a potential film in here. So I started doing my research and then I started filming, and it would take me quite a few years.
Can I interrupt you though?
To film, yeah.
From the book, did you say that like growing up, you weren't aware of Malocchio? You did not know that this existed?
Well, it's like no one sits you down and says, I need to explain something to you, right? You kind of, by watching other people interact, by sort of hearing bits and pieces of conversation from the adults, you kind of start to piece together what this thing is. But if we look at like my family setting and my paisans, they don't even use the word Malocchio when they talk about the evil eye. They use the word fascinat. So you're like, who's fascinated? What? What's going on? So it wasn't something like my mother never sat me down and explained Malocchio to me.
No, but did it come up where like, I know you have siblings, like maybe somebody in the family had that really bad headache.
Well, that's what happens, right? You're at a party and all of a sudden you
always a party.
a family gathering, usually a party. And you kind of see like a small group of older women kind of like hush and say, oh, we need to, oh, I think, oh, I that. And you see them like whisk someone away. But there's no like, you know, open declaration saying, guys, everyone at the table, so-and-so has Malocchio, we need to go take care of it. That doesn't happen, right? So you'd witness these things, but you wouldn't quite understand because you were young and it was just not something that you talked about yet. So I had to kind of figure it out bit by bit.
So when you made the documentary, was this like you were going out on a mission to find out, does Malocchio exist?
Exactly.
Is it real? Is that what the mission was?
I set up the film as sort of my little journey to uncover what exactly Malocchio is. And then the big question is, do I myself believe in it? So that's how I set up the storyline. And, you know, you start in the kitchen with my aunt and a family friend. And, you know, I interviewed people in Montreal. And then I went to New York to do some filming. We went to Italy to do some filming. But that's the setup. And sort of, you know, as I would learn one thing in the film, I'd sort of go beyond to the next element to try to piece together what the film is. And I hope, like, that's kind of the setup we have for the audience. They, alongside with me, figure out what this thing is. Yeah.
And how many years did it take to complete?
Oh my God. I started the research in the late 90s. I probably started filming maybe 5-6 years before the film was finished. Yeah. takes a while. I mean, especially when it's sort of, you know, it's an independent documentary, you're calling on a lot of favors, you get busy with life and with work. So yeah, it took a while.
Absolutely. And like, okay, so after all this work and research and interviewing, I know you interviewed academics and you interviewed, I'm assuming, I think, little old ladies and, you know, in the towns and
We
all
got,
kinds
yeah,
of
we have one
people.
little old lady in a town of Eboli in Italy. Yeah, definitely a practitioner. Yeah.
Yes. And so what did you come away with?
So the big thing is that this belief is not exclusive to Italians. That's one thing I was really surprised to find out when I started researching for the film.
You mean there's
It's,
evil in other people too?
oh my God, there are countless cultures that believe in the evil eye. And I mean, there are references to the evil eye in ancient Egyptian artwork. And so it's been around for a while. But it's, you know, if you think of it, it's this idea that someone who feels jealousy or envy towards you can sort of give you a physical ailment. You know, it's, if you think about it, it's energy, metaphysics. It's normal that a lot of cultures would believe in that. And you know, a lot still do. Yeah.
And absolutely. And I
Not
think,
just
you know,
Italians, yeah.
no. And when you talk to the scientific part of it, you know, with the academics and
Yeah.
whatnot, there's going to be this doubt because you cannot prove it. In fact, you have a sentence in the book that
Yeah.
I just adore.
Tell
Non
me.
è vero, ma ci credo.
Oh my God. So
Non è vero, ma ci credo.
people uttered that phrase to me all over the world. I had people in Canada, in the US, and in Italy all say the same thing to me. And I'm like, what is going on here? And it's this thing where, and it's usually like, it was usually academics who would, at one point during the interview, spout this. And it was this thing, I think it's the academic part of them is like, I'm not sure this thing is real, but just in case
You
they don't
think
want to
they're
jinx
afraid?
it.
You think they're afraid to admit it? Like their training and their education tells them you're
Yeah.
crazy, this don't exist.
So there was one gentleman I interviewed in Italy, and when I went to film in Eboli, I brought along a good friend of mine, Elias. He's my DOP, he's my cameraman. He's worked on a lot of projects with me, and he's of Greek origin. So he's, you know, he knows what the evil eye is. The Greeks believe in it as well, but he doesn't speak Italian. So obviously, I acted as his translator when we were in Eboli, and so we did this one interview. I found this great guy in Eboli who sort of helped me find the old lady that we film. And he brought me around the town. He was really cool. And so I do a big sit down with him. And one of the last questions I ask him, so he's an academic. One of the last questions I ask him is, do you believe in Malocchio? And this was all done in Italian. And there's this long pause, and he kind of makes this face. And then he goes on to explain that the logical side of him is wary of the idea, but what he's seen, what he's witnessed, because he's sort of been recording, like, you know, this belief system. It's hard for him to be on the fence. And after the interview, my friend, my cameraman guy says, "Why did you ask him at the end with that long, big pause?" And I said, "Oh, I asked him if he believed in Malocchio." And he's like, "Holy moly!" Like he was like, almost like, "Shoot, what do I answer?" So yeah, I think there's a hesitancy to for academics, for, you know, intelligent people, whatever that means, to admit it. Yeah.
But you know,
But
like karma. You believe in
yes. Yeah.
karma? Can we touch karma?
Well, I mean,
But you believe
any belief system, there's
you cannot,
no.
it's right, it's not scientific.
Yeah.
And Malocchio, I don't, it's not an anti-Catholic thing. We are all Catholics.
No.
But so I was first married. I'm married to a girl born in Calabria. So I was first, we were first married.
And Frank, you're from?
I am my mother's Sicilian. And my father's Abruzzese.
Okay. So the belief is potent, yeah.
Well, yes, and when it hits you, okay? So 27, 28 years ago, we're at a party, bunch of people, come home. Oh my God, my head, my two Excedrin, which is magic don't work. I'm dying. So
The
why?
Western medicine didn't work. Yeah.
Right. And now I'm dying. I mean, this is like the worst headache in my lifetime. Wife calls, the little lady. È fascinato. She does what she has to do. Sì, è vero, Frank, è fascinato. Then she does what she has to do. I do a thing. We fill up water in the sink, salt, left hand, mm-hmm. two times, cross, up, towel, what we have to do.
So in your case, you've got the woman currying you, I guess, over the phone, but you have to do the ritual.
I have to do what she says.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Now, when you're in that position, okay, my father used to have a saying in our business, a drowning man will reach for a toothpick.
Interesting, yeah.
Agarito.
Mm-hmm.
When you're desperate.
Anything, yeah.
Anything. So I do it. She does it. I do it. Go lay down. Feel great.
20 minutes. I always tell people it's 20 minutes.
It is relatively quick. And then you say, non è vero, non è vero, non è vero, ma ci credo proprio. Io ci credo. How could I not? Okay. Now I have a ridiculous story.
Uh-oh.
About 4 years ago, we go meet friends at a restaurant. I'm in the restaurant. We didn't even start eating. My head is hurting. I mean, it's hurting bad. I go to the car. I don't know. I'm like, I got to get out of here. It's getting worse and it's getting worse and it's getting worse. And I let my wife talk me into going to emergency rooms. Now, I am not a doctor kind of guy. I don't go to hospitals. I don't go get physicals.
Frank, you're like the typical Italian man.
I don't do it at all. Give me a little Excedrin in the house. If I'm dying, I'll take it. That's it. So we go to the hospital. So we're in the emergency room. And I want to say that it was like the first year that the Chicago Cubs baseball team was like in the playoff. They might have been in the World Series that night. So like the emergency room is empty. Okay. No one's there. So I get in right away. So I'm sitting there. Now I'm the type of guy, I'm like too sincere and honest for my own good. And I see things like I'm very old school. I'm 54 and I act like I'm 104. Okay. So we have the doctor come in and he goes, oh, what's the matter? I'm like, you know, on my head, blah, 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 you know, but I literally am so stupid. I tell the doctor in the emergency room, well, you know, it might be malocchio. I had this one time. I kid you not. He looked at me like, somebody order a straitjacket because this
exactly.
is insane. I did this because I'm sincere. Like I'm literally telling the guy, well, this could be the diagnosis. I could have malocchio. So I believe I'm a believer. Okay.
I mean, most believers it's because it's happened to them or they've witnessed it firsthand. And it's like what I just saw can't be explained any other way. That's usually what happens. So a lot of doubters become believers once they've experienced it themselves or they've witnessed, you know, a close friend, a relative go through it. Yeah, that's usually
now,
what happens.
We wish this stuff didn't happen, but yeah. Jealousy and wishing evil and all these things, I'm pretty sure have been for the amount of time that human beings have been walking on the earth.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, because you said wishing evil, so a very important distinction I always have to make, and since I've been doing research on this film, I always find myself correcting people. And people say, oh, I'm going to give you malocchio. I'm always like, that's not how it works. You don't give it intentionally. It's an important thing. If you're thinking of like, I want to wish evil on someone, I want to curse someone, that falls into the realm of black magic. And that usually means you've gone to someone like a mago in Italy, right? Some kind of witch doctor to ask them, look, there's so-and-so, I want
that. No worries, I believe you. I don't have the power to do that.
It's so important people understand this.
Yes.
It's intentional.
Yes.
So the person that gives it to you, definitely there was an envy or jealousy, absolutely. But they didn't mean to make you sick. They didn't mean to give you a headache or a weird stomach ache or this weird overall feeling. It's very important, which is why I tell people, the person that's helping, that's doing the cure is going to ask. My mother always says, who did you talk to, right? Who did you bump into? Even if you kind of figure out, oh, shoot, I bumped into so-and-so and we were talking about this. And it's very important that you don't go to that person and accuse them of giving you malocchio. It's very important because they didn't do it on purpose.
Bad idea, right.
Yeah,
right.
So, you know, it's kind of like the etiquette of malocchio.
Sure. Can I give a little shout out? We have a lot of listeners Just want to say hi to Helen Tenuta, Felice, Melissa, Mr. John Conenna, Teresa Nicastro, Rosa, Anna. Thank you for listening. Hope you're enjoying
it. So cool.
Yeah, no, this is the second time I've done this kind of setup. You are 100% right. We are talking about taking it away.
Yeah.
We have we kind of know what we're talking about to take it away. The real money's in giving it, but I'll never have that power. So
no, and like I always tell people, like if you want to curse someone, which I don't recommend doing, but that means you're going to someone, you're going to a witch doctor, you're going to someone who does some kind of weird spell, and usually they're going to ask for payments as well. So that's a whole other world. It's black magic, and
Yesterday, I'm with a buddy. I told him we were going to do this. He's from Calabria.
Yeah.
Older man. And he said, I had a little experience. When he was a kid in Calabria, his stomach always hurt when he'd eat. Always hurting. So one day, mom brings him to some lady.
Yeah.
And she starts rubbing his belly, and she's saying things and rubbing. He's like, you know, I don't know how old he was, but he was a young boy. And it went away. And it went away, and he never had that again. So, come ha detto tu, non è vero, ma ci credo.
Yeah, it's really cool. And that's the one fun thing. When I started screening the film, is I realized right away after my first screening that we had to leave time for a Q&A after. Because what would happen after every screening, and you know, you come back up, you say a few words, and then there's always does anyone have any questions or comments? There's always that awkward pause. But as soon as one person would tell a story, it's like crazy after. We'd go on for like half an hour now because everybody's like, oh, I have a story to tell. I have a story. And it was amazing to see that it's almost like everybody sort of had these secret stories that they were embarrassed to share until they realized, oh, I'm in a safe space and other people have the same experience. I'm going to share mine. So that was the stories I've heard. It was so cool. Yeah, really cool. And it's part of our culture. That's what I tell people. It's part of, you know, the Italian culture as it is part of other cultures.
It is. And I don't.
It's part of why we, you know, we're taught not to brag, you know, about our accomplishments, that kind of thing. And
okay. Do you guys believe in having something red on you to fight it? Like, say you know in anticipation of an evening that you just want to cover your bases, so to speak, to stay safe.
I don't know
if you guys do this kind of stuff.
For us, it's the amulets. It's important to have amulets close to
okay,
your
skin. Okay, so we have...
Yeah, you have the corno, the traditional one. Yeah.
Right.
That's this, a plastic. Not a pepper, people. It's a horn. A mano cornuto, yeah.
I don't have the other one.
The gobetto. Do I have a gobetto nearby? I have it in my book.
The hunchback.
He's the cute one. He's the funny, you know, the hunchback with the top hat. Where is he now that I'm looking for him? This guy. Yeah,
exactly.
The gobetto.
Exactly.
He's the funny looking guy. And he's usually, the bottom is usually always a horn. And the hand, he's got either, sometimes he's doing the mano cornuto. He's got sometimes a horseshoe. An umbrella.
Right.
But they say the gobetto or the gobo is the most potent because he sort of engulfs all three amulets.
Really?
Yeah, because he's got, you know, his bottom is always a horn and he's got the mano cornuto somewhere. But
you realize now sales are going to skyrocket for that now that you mentioned that.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah,
I'm going to buy stock in that thing.
Yeah, but the corno is the most popular.
Okay, so the corno.
Yeah.
Back in like the 80s and 90s where I'm at in Chicago. It was a big Italian-American area. Everybody's car had it hanging.
Of course.
From the
I might still everybody. Have one hanging from
yeah.
my car.
But now this, see, a lot of people, I think they think that's for good luck. That's not for good luck. That fights off evil.
Yeah. So you know, as, you know, the belief in Malocchio is an oral tradition passed on generation through generation. So you know how it is. It changes. So somehow, yeah, somewhere like, the immigrant communities that came to North America started associating it to good luck, kind of like a rabbit's foot or sort of a representation of of our Italian culture. So, you know, you would go to, you'd go visit New York, Little Italy, and of course you come home with a horn because it's a souvenir from Little Italy. So somewhere it got mixed up. It got turned from a protection against evil eye to a good luck charm, which I guess if you think of it's a logical transfer, but it's wrong. It's not a good luck charm, it's a protection
Right. And
against evil eye.
also, you correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't it have to be that I can't buy it for myself and hang it in the car? Someone has to give it to me.
Well, so yeah, so a lot of people believe, again, this belief, you know, there's a lot of variations in the cure and how things work because it's passed on orally. But a lot of be people believe it's better to get to gift it than to buy it for yourself. So when I was promoting the book, sorry, when I was promoting the film, I'd be selling the DVDs and I used to sell amulets. And a lot of times it was adorable. I'd have like two friends. They'd literally buy a horn. They'd each buy a horn and gift it to the other one. Because they're like, oh, it's more powerful if we gift it to each other. So yeah, that's part of it, which is why, for example, you know, a godparent often will give a godchild
Right.
the amulet as a gift.
Right.
That's, you know, that happens often because it's supposed to be, you know, someone comes back from Italy. Chances are if you get jewelry from them, it might be like a little gold horn
Sure.
or something. And that's the idea. It's supposed to be a more powerful amulet if it's gifted to you. Yeah, a
Right.
lot of people believe that.
Right. A few more shout outs. Hi, Ivana. Hi, Maria. Hi, Armenia. Sarah, Pasquale. Hi to everybody, and thank you for listening. Now, correct me, I forgot, I didn't hear what you were saying. Do you guys believe in the red being on you, like something red on you? Is that something you guys believe in?
Not the red, it's more the amulet. So the idea is
Okay,
that
but not.
if you're going to a party, you should have an amulet close to the skin, which is why it's, you know, people usually wear it around the neck or on a bracelet as a charm. A lot of people have it on their keychain because the idea is that it's probably in your bag, close to you. So it's usually a protective amulet close to you. That's what we
Okay.
tend to believe.
Now, newborn baby, little
Oh,
baby.
yes.
So now you say, wow, ma quanto bello. What do you got to say after?
So everybody, you gotta bless the kid after you compliment them. And I talk about in the book, when we were young, one of my great aunts, whenever she would see us, would like pinch our ch cheeks and be like, "Oh, come sei brutta!" And as a little kid, you're like, "Why is Tia Teresa calling me ugly?" It took me a long time as an adult when I was researching Malocchio to realize that that was actually the most endearing thing she could do to us, because in essence, she wanted to be sure that she didn't unintentionally give us Malocchio by complimenting us. So by calling us ugly, it's almost like she broke the potential giving a Malocchio. Or you'll hear a lot of, and you hear this especially in older ladies, older Italian women will be like, come sei bella, Dio ti benedica. And again, that's the idea that I'm complimenting you, but in case there's a bit of envy or jealousy, I'm gonna break it by blessing you. And
Exactly.
it's something, I mean, it's love. It's that's the
Right.
only way
You
I can
know what
explain
it
it,
is?
because they don't want to unintentionally give you the evil eye. And my
Exactly.
mom does this. Like, let's say we're all together and like, you know, the kids are being extra cute. So everybody's like, oh, he's so cute. And at the end of the night, she's like, oh God, I hope we didn't give so and so the evil eye. So she'll do a little incantation because she
Sure.
knows how to do it as a safety measure. Because
Well, absolutely, because
we were
people
complimenting the kid too much
were
tonight because
sensitive. We got a
he said his first
newborn.
words or he said
Sure.
something adorable and we were all goo goo gaga. So
Sure.
yeah.
So throw a God blessing after the
Yeah,
compliment.
God bless, a little preventative. Like in essence, she would do a preventative curing just in case.
Sure.
Yeah, and it's we tend to see this a lot in the older women and even the older Italian men. You know, they want to be extra careful. It's love. It's like, you know, it took me a long time to
Absolutely.
realize my great aunt loved us. That's why she called us ugly. But as a kid,
Absolutely.
it
Do
was a
you
little
guys
traumatizing.
believe in anything with salt?
So, it is a common feature of the curing ritual, but not for everyone. So it varies. I always joke that there are as many curing ritual variations as there are towns in Italy. So some people will use a pinch of salt during the curing ritual when they've got the bowl of water and olive oil. Some might just throw a pinch, some might like as they're throwing a pinch, do a sign of the cross. Some people might throw it over their shoulder, throw it out the door. There's all kinds of variations. It's common, but not for everyone. Yeah. Knives, too. Some people will, like, stab the water with a knife, but not everyone does that. Yeah.
If you are in a room or a party or whatever, and it's a potential, you do a little of this in your pocket?
A little. The safest is the mano cornuto. So I always tell my friends, you know, because, like, what if I don't have an amulet? I said, well, you do the mano cornuto, and you kind of discreetly direct towards the person you think could maybe give you the evil eye. And again, okay, discreetly, you don't go into their face and be like, I think you're giving me.
Don't be teaching young kids to go to parties and go, you.
It's got to be done discreetly. So I have found myself, you know, you sort of put your hand in your pocket and you face the like, you've done that. Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong.
Or if you have an amulet, you touch it.
Right. There's nothing wrong with protection.
It's preventative medicine.
They teach that in high school, don't they?
Sorry? Yeah. Always better to prevent it to then have to deal with curing it.
So if someone wants to ask you,
yes,
how do you, your family, take away the malocchio? Do you want to say, like, the procedure?
Well, I actually include my mother's prayer in the book. So my mother was taught by a friend of the family, my family friend. She was taught a whole prayer ritual. It's long and it's quite funny, and it's a mix. So first thing, my mother is taught, she either has to touch the person who's affected, or let's say
they're at another house.
Let's say, see, my mother can't, if you call my mother and she hasn't seen you recently, she can't do it.
Other really?
Than, my mother has to either touch you, or let's say my sister was over and she calls my mother an hour later and says, Ma, I have malocchio. She'll be like, what chair was she on? Mm. She'll touch the chair that my sister touched. So there has to be some remnants of that person.
Fortunately for me, my lady, I don't have to be there. She don't have to touch
me. Some people do that. You call them on the phone and they're doing it. Yeah. So my mom was taught she has to either touch you or something you've touched. And then she goes through this prayer ritual. And it's a mix of Catholic prayers with these funny lyrics about two brothers visiting a town. And then she does more Catholic prayers and then back to the funny lyrics, limericks. And then what happens is while she's doing the incantation, if she starts tearing up and yawning, that is positive that the person has malocchio. And I always say the curing ritual acts as both a diagnosis and the cure. So once she starts yawning and crying, it's a diagnosis and the start of the cure at the same time. And if she finds by the end of it, she finds it's really potent, because I mean, she's like really tearing up and can't stop yawning, she might do it a second or third time. She'll repeat the whole incantation. So for her, it's that simple. Other people will use the olive oil and water ritual, but my mom was taught the prayer, so that's how she does it.
Okay, another point.
Yeah.
I have heard that the only time to learn how to take it away is Christmas Eve
at midnight. So true. Again, it's a common belief, but not for everyone. So like in my mom's situation, she was taught, the friend was over, and in that moment she was taught how to do it, during that visit rather. But yeah, some people believe in that. And then I've also heard that some people believe that if so many years pass, it's almost like you need to do a refresher course.
Well, sure, you know.
But again, it's not everybody believes that. But I've heard some people say, after so many years, you need to relearn the ritual or kind of just go through the motions again. But yeah, some people believe that. But again, it's not 100% of all believers. Yeah.
Do you know, is there something to do with, like, okay, so they teach this girl, they can't fully be able to take it away unless they themselves pass away?
No, that again, so again, it's a variety. So some people believe that, for example, they can teach three people, and after they teach the third person, they'll lose their own powers.
Mm.
But most people, no, I haven't really heard that. I don't hear that often, because it's usually what ends up happening is that the person who knows how to cure it it's almost like they feel a responsibility to pass on the knowledge, and they'll kind of decide. It's like it's difficult for you to go to approach someone and say, hey, can you teach me? It's almost like the person who knows how to do it kind of chooses you. And they'll kind of look around and, you know, they'll choose. Usually it's not always, but it's mostly passed on from woman to woman, but not necessarily. But most of the time. And usually it'll be like a daughter, a godchild, a favorite niece. Someone, it's almost like they're entrusting you with this very powerful information. And if they entrust you, it means they believe that you're going to respect it. You're going to follow the protocols. You're going to use it, that kind of thing. So it's a privilege to be sort of offered the curing ritual for sure.
Does your mom get a headache if the person, when she removes it, does she get a headache?
No, she just experiences the like heavy yawning and the tearing up.
Okay.
But she doesn't take on the headache herself. Okay. Not in her case. I've heard that some people do that.
Yeah.
That happens to them, yeah.
Okay. I got to be honest. I feel better that I have this in my back pocket, so to speak. You know what I mean? For any potential case that's going to happen. Because I got to be honest with you, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Eventually, it's going to happen.
I have this great scene in the film where I interviewed my mom and my aunt. And this aunt, she's like a second mother to me. And they're making the annual tomato sauce is when I figured I wanted to put them in a place where they're focused and they were talking to me about Malocchio. And this aunt is Calabrese. She married my uncle. So she married into the family. And she made a really interesting comment during the interview. She explained that if you think back to, you know, she's now in her 70s. So when she was young in Calabria.
Oh, your aunt is Calabrese?
Yeah, my aunt, she married into the family. So what she explained was, if you think of it back then, we didn't have money to go to the doctor. So things like headaches, earaches, weird stomach aches, you relied on that elderly woman in the town or the friend of the family or the relative. Everybody knows somebody who knows how to cure it. And you kind of hope that it was just malocchio and not something more severe. But there was this sense of comfort knowing that if you had this weird headache, there was someone that could help you. You didn't have to go find a doctor and pay for the doctor. You just had to bring, you know, if you had chickens, you brought them a half dozen eggs or something as a thank you gift, right? Always a gift, never a payment. So she's like, we relied on that. We relied on this folk medicine to get better when they felt ill. Yeah,
I think it's great. I think it's great. And I feel good that I have this. And you're right. It's a part of our culture. And it's a part of our tradition.
Part of our culture. It's a colorful part of our culture.
A colorful, but a reality.
Yeah.
And keep it going. And like you said, it's almost like a duty to pass it on to another family member.
Now I'm going to, one of the assumptions I made when I started researching the film is that it was going to be a bunch of old people talking to me about Malocchio. The fact is a lot of young people believe, and it's usually because their nonna or their nonna told them about it, or, you know, they had this headache and the nonna says, I know what to do. And all of a sudden they're like, what's going on here? It will be, it's continuing. It's nice to see it's continuing. It's going to adapt. That is normal. It's belief that's constantly changing. For example, when I interviewed the woman in Italy, Elena, who, you know, cures Malocchio almost on a daily basis, people go to her for help. She was astounded to hear that in North America, we could call somebody. And she was like, no. You have to come see me. I can't do this over the phone. And then I kind of analyzed it after and I said, well, it makes sense. Because in a little town, going to see Elena, she's probably a couple of minutes away from you. But if I think of my city, Montreal, the greater Montreal area, you know, I might not get in the car and drive 30 minutes to go see my aunt. So I'm just going to call her. So my theory is that our immigrant parents and grandparents kind of changed the rules out of
reality.
It was just more convenient to call Zia Maria to cure rather than, you know, walk a few steps and go to her door. So it adapted, because this doesn't happen in little towns in Italy. You have to go see the person. So The younger generation will adapt as well. I find they're more open about the curing ritual. I think it's not going to be as secretive. You know, I was able to find rituals and put them in the book. Maybe a generation ago, it would have been very difficult to find detailed rituals to publish. So yeah, it'll be around. It's just going to change. We don't know the full extent of the change yet. We'll see. Sure. You know, we have to wait a generation.
Well, I think this is just great that you did all this, and you know, you brought light to this and you brought knowledge. And let me show the book again. Okay. And we're going to put a link for the book.
Great.
And the documentary is called Malocchio, correct? Yeah. And it's on YouTube?
Yeah. So last year, I figured, you know, the film's 10 years old. All the licenses have expired with TV broadcasters. So you can now watch it for free on YouTube. Yeah. If you look up Malocchio, you'll find it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, and we'll put a link for that as well. And real quickly, so you have this online magazine, ItaloCanadese.com.
Yes.
Now, you started that, and what's the basis of that?
So I wanted to, I also work as a writer, and I had started a few projects, I think it happened twice, where we were sort of, you know, starting a publication for sort of the, you know, the young generation. And then things were starting we were starting to create a buzz, and then the publishers would decide to stop the publication because there was no ad revenue or whatever. And I was like, it happened twice. And I was like, that's it. I want to do something, but I want to be the one to decide when I stop. So instead of doing like a print magazine or a newspaper, which is very expensive, I decided, you know what? I'm going to do an online magazine. The costs are low. And it's been going on for over 10 years. We're a small team. You know, sometimes it might be a month where no article appears, and then in a week it'll be a few. But that's the cool thing about online magazines. It was one thing I realized right away, the freedom of not having to deal with like real deadlines or, you know, word count. Whenever one of my writers or myself has a story ready, we post it.
Is it just about Montreal, or is it about
there's a lot of Montreal content just because I'm based in Montreal, but there's stories across Canada.
Okay.
And there just has to be an Italian Canadian angle. So it's not necessarily about Italian Canadian culture all the time. It might, you know, there might be a singer songwriter or an artist who's of Italian origin, and we'll profile them as long as there's some kind of link.
Absolutely. So yeah. Montreal, I'm not real familiar. Are there a lot of Italians in Montreal?
Yeah, we're about, we number about 300,000 of Italian origin. We're now talking, you know, their second, third generation. Sure. But yeah, no, it's a nice, it's
less than Toronto though.
Yes, Toronto, I can't remember the number. So yeah, the biggest Italian community in Canada is in Toronto, and we're second and Vancouver's third. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So there is a good. So now you made another film a couple years back, Terra Mia, yeah, about the Italian community in Montreal.
Yeah. So what I did with this film, and that was for CBC television, which is it's kind of like our PBS.
Oh, okay.
So I did a film, and what I did is I posed the question, now that we're second, third generation Italian Montrealers, can the community survive? Can we still call ourselves an Italian community after so many generations? And what is it going to look like? So I interviewed mostly younger people who have some kind of attachment to see if there's still a culture, a community rather, and what it's going to look like and how it's going to adapt and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, that's great, because that's a problem everywhere. That's a problem.
Yeah. You know, there's all this, you know, I always joke, there's, you know, the old boys club that's clinging hard to a community that made sense, you know, in the 80s, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, but it's changing now. And that was kind of the premise of the film, is the community will exist, will continue, but you gotta let the young generation decide how. You know, how are they gonna showcase their heritage? How are they gonna celebrate it? You can't, you know, the grandparent generation can't tell that young person, oh, but we always had a banquet, so you guys need to continue doing banquets. And they're like, that's not what interests me. So it'll continue and it'll be strong if we let the young generation dictate how it's going to continue.
But it's great that you're doing these things to entice them or to make them aware and to hopefully bring them in to have some interest.
Well, it's almost like to just put them on the pedestal because they exist. It's just that they work in very small cliques and they work outside of these sort of established Italian community organizations. Because, you know, a 20-something-year-old is not interested in an annual golf tournament and 7-course banquet.
No.
It's not what they're interested in. But no. They listen to Italian music. They watch Italian films. They celebrate the World Cup. So it's just, you got to let them figure out how to celebrate and promote their culture. Yeah,
you're right. You're absolutely right. Well,
and I get why it's tough for the old generation because they built those organizations. But I always tell them, like, the membership's going down because young people are not going to.
We have the same problems here in Chicago. Yeah. And I mean,
I think it's like this for any community. It's not exclusive to Italians. Yeah,
no, it's probably not. And I just feel like we've got to do something different. And we've got to try, we got to do something because I have fear of, like, you know, not tomorrow, but 30, 40 years from now, what's going to be left? You know, I'm speaking for Chicago of an Italian American community. And if we're going the way we're going, I'm a little scared about it. And I mean, I don't want to see that. I want things to continue just like, you know,
some things will end and that's, we have to accept something that maybe, you know, was a tradition for 30, 40 years, even in Montreal, like, I see it diminishing, but I see the diehards holding on, but it's,
Yes, no, absolutely.
But something else, for example, I find, and I always tell the older generation, I said, there is a huge contingency of young Italian Montrealers, for example, online, celebrating their culture. You guys don't see it because you're not online, but, you know, like.
It's there.
It's there.
You're right.
It's just being transmitted differently. Yeah.
You're 100% right. But no, I was going to say thank you beyond the interview. Thank you for all you're doing to keep our Italian culture alive in Canada and everywhere. And everybody, buy this book. Very interesting book.
Thank you. It's a great gift.
It's a great gift. You learn so much about it. It's okay to buy it for someone and give it to them.
Yeah.
Right? It's very good. So thank you so much for the interview. It's been a pleasure. It was very interesting.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh no, it was my pleasure. This was a lot of fun. Good subject, and you know, like I said, something that's kind of close to home with us too. So thank you so much to all the listeners. Thank you, and have a great day or night.
Ciao.